Are you coming to the tree? They strung up a man, they say, who murdered three. Strange things that happen here, no stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you...
Hello and welcome to Film Bookcast, the podcast that we received as our grand prize for winning the 74th Podcast Games, an annual fights at the death that pits podcasters against each other. Film Bookcast is the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me as always is the girl on fire.
Mike DiCriscio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good, thanks for calling me that.
Yeah, well, we won the podcast games together. It was actually...
Yeah,
it was,
that's true.
It was hard.
Unprecedented.
Fun. Yeah, unprecedented. You know, we want to take some time to think about those we lost. Chris Hardwick, Mark Maron.
Yeah, you know, they put in a good effort.
But... in the end, you know, only two can win the podcast games.
That's right. That's right. So in case you didn't know, we're reviewing the Hunger Games movie.
Yeah, it's a weird coincidence that we're reviewing the Hunger Games right after we won the podcast games. But that's the way it goes sometimes. If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, essentially we start with some film news and then usually move on to some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever media we've been consuming lately. After that, we will move on to our featured view. This week, we are reviewing the newest film from director Francis Lawrence and the final film in the Hunger Games franchise, Mockingjay Part 2. Are you ready to begin the show, Mike?
I am. Let's get into some news.
All right, let's do that. So for film news, there's one pretty big thing I wanted to talk about. That's a big deal to the both of us, because we're both huge fans of this show. Mystery Science Theater 3000 is officially coming back.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And it's the best thing of all time.
Yes. I'm super excited about it. Joel Hodgson, who created the show and starred as Joel on the show for the first five or six seasons, started a Kickstarter to bring the show back. They needed to reach a goal of $2 million to make three new episodes of the show, and for every additional $1.1 million they make, or something along those lines, they can make an additional three episodes.
Right.
Right now, the Kickstarter is at about $2.6 million, you said?
Yep.
So right now, they are officially definitely making three episodes and are closing in on six. And the goal is to make 12. I'm not sure if they can make if they can reach that.
Yeah, I think there's I just saw it was like something like 16 or 17 days left in the campaign.
So
they need to get to 5.5 million to make 12 episodes.
Yeah, and they're at 2.6 now. Yeah. So at the rate they're going, I think they can reach 3.3 million, which is how much I think they need to make to get six.
To get six episodes. Yeah.
I'm not sure how much further they can go past that, but I would love it if they could.
Yeah.
You know, more Mystery Science Theater is better than less Mystery Science Theater.
Correct. Yes, that is the fourth law of thermodynamics.
Yep, that is how that works.
Yes,
and in addition to that, Joel Hodgson has said that you know, this new Mr. Science Theater would involve a whole new cast and new characters, and so the new host of the show is going to be Jonah Ray from The Nerdist, who I know you're a big fan of, Mike.
Yeah, I think he's really funny on that show. He had to miss the podcast games because of Mystery Science Theater, so
so that's good.
Yeah, it worked out. Otherwise, he'd be dead.
Yeah, by our hand.
Yeah, so that's awesome. They also announced the new mad scientist for the show is Felicia Day.
Yeah, who is awesome. I'm really excited about that. And I guess her character is going to be the granddaughter of...
Pearl.
Yeah, the granddaughter of Pearl and the daughter of Dr. Clayton Forrester, who are the two previous mads on the show.
Yeah, so which I think is great, because Felicia Day is... super wacky anyway, like,
yeah,
as a person, so that she totally fits those kinds of over the top characters.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. And they also announced the voices of the two of Crow and Tom Servo. They're two lesser known comedians that Jonah Ray recommended.
There you go.
Supposedly. And they've still yet to announce the new henchman for the new med scientist, which is something they're going to do as well.
Yeah, I know the people I saw in the Mystery Science Theater subreddit, and they're not sure what's going on. But the cutout for the henchman sort of looks like the cutout for TV's Frank, like with the curly hair at the top.
Okay.
So they were all super excited, and they don't know if that's just like a tease by Joel to make fun of them, you know, to make fun of the misties.
Yes. So. I mean, we'll find out about that soon enough. But I'm very excited about this, Mike. How about you?
Yeah, well, obviously.
Yeah. Yes. Joel has said he's going to invite the entire cast and crew of the show back to be in the writer's room and to occasionally do cameos, perhaps. So that includes the people on Riff Tracks right now, like Mike Nelson, Bill Corbett, Trace Bellew, or Bellew,
I think.
Bellew.
Yeah. He's the original Dr. Forrester, which would be awesome. Kevin Nelson is hopefully going to be there.
Yep.
So I would love to see that. I would love to see I want to see the new cast have a chance, like, for their, like, obviously to get their own writing in.
Yep.
But to have the original writers from the original shows come back would be so cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Very nice. So, yeah, I'm really excited about this. More Mystery Science Theater after almost, like, I think it's been, like, 15 years since Mystery Science Theater went off the air or something like that.
Yeah, I think somewhere in 2000 or something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah, and since then, Riff Tracks has kind of taken its place. Cinematic Titanic has kind of taken its place. And there's, like, a whole culture of, like, riffing on movies now that Mystery Science Theater kind of, like, you know,
started.
Yeah, it spearheaded it back in the 90s. And so it'd be great to have, like, the grandfather of all movie riffing things, you know, back in action. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, definitely. I saw also on Joel did a AMA on Reddit right when the Kickstarter launched, and somebody asked him about, will they update the movies? Like, since now it's the 90s are kind of the era of, like, shitty movies that we make fun of now.
Yeah.
And he said that he would probably keep it to those, like, 50s and 60s B-movies, because that's kind of the spirit of Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah.
But there are some movies from the late 80s and early 90s that he would want to riff, so
it'd be cool
to get a mix with some new stuff going on.
Yeah, and even, I mean, the old show even riffed some movies from the 90s every once in a while. I think Future War is a movie from the 90s.
Is it really? Oh, my God.
I think so.
I didn't even know that.
I mean, it looks so shitty that you wouldn't assume
so. I wouldn't, yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it is. And there are other ones as well, but that's just the one that came to mind.
One of my favorite jokes is when they call that guy Jean-Claude Gosh Darn.
That is one of the best. Yeah. So anyway, we're really excited about Mystery Science Theater. Are you going to be watching any Mystery Science Theaters in preparation for the new season, Mike?
What am I ever not watching new Mystery Science Theaters?
Fair enough. I know on Thanksgiving, they started this last year or 2 years ago, but they do like a Mystery Science Theater marathon online.
Yeah, they do Turkey Day, which apparently was a Comedy Central tradition. They would do it, air Mystery Science Theater all day on Thanksgiving.
Right. So this,
and now they picked it up on YouTube, and also it's on Yahoo this year.
Right. So on Thursday, they'll be streaming old Mystery Science Theaters all day, which is going to be very cool. I'm going to try to pop in for that when I'm not, being dragged away by my family.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's move on to our next piece of film news. One of my favorite directors is Edgar Wright, and he is currently working on his new movie called Baby Driver, which is going to be out next year. But it seems like after that, Edgar Wright is going to direct and co-write a new movie with DreamWorks Animation. It's going to be his first animated movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a full feature-length film?
Yeah, it's going to be... Gonna be a feature-length DreamWorks animated movie about shadows.
Sure, why not? That sounds awesome, because Edgar Wright's involved.
Yeah, exactly. DreamWorks Animation has been actually developing a movie called Me and My Shadow for a long time. Like, for a few years ago, it's when that movie started being talked about. They haven't heard anything about it in a long time. They're not confirming whether this is the movie that Edgar Wright is making.
Right.
But all signs point to probably.
Yeah. How many animated movies about shadows could there be?
Within the same studio, yeah.
That's what I mean.
But anyway, I mean, I'm really excited for the possibilities of an Edgar Wright animated movie. His movies move so quickly as a live-action film. They're basically cartoons already. Yeah,
absolutely.
So I'm really excited to see the possibilities of what he could do with animation.
Yeah, I think that'll be really cool. I thought, for some reason, I thought you said short when you told me that we were like, I don't know where I got that from. But I'm glad I'm going to get more Edgar Wright time.
Yeah.
Edgar Wright time is best time.
Edgar Wright time is best time. And, like he was taking off. He left Ant-Man a couple years ago and things were like, oh man, I don't know when Edgar Wright's making another movie.
Right.
Like, I feel like this is a horrible world we live in and all this. But now he's coming out with a new movie next year called Baby Driver, which sounds awesome. And do you know anything about Baby Driver?
I assume it's not a sequel to Look Who's Talking.
You are correct in that assumption.
All right, on, good.
Let me pull up the plot synopsis of Baby Driver. This is a movie... All right, I mean, here's the IMDb plot synopsis, which is obviously very vague. It's one sentence.
Yep.
After being coerced into working for a crime boss, a young getaway driver finds himself taking part in a doomed heist. And that movie's going to star Lily James, Kevin Spacey, Ansel Elgort's going to be the main star, John Hamm and Jamie Foxx both going to be in it as well.
What?
Yeah, and Edgar Wright has described the movie as kind of a musical.
Okay.
And it's coming out in March 2017, so that's when Baby Driver's coming out, not next year, as I thought.
Not next year, okay.
But that is going to be his next movie, and then I supposedly after Baby Driver would be this DreamWorks animation movie.
It's an animated film.
Yes.
All right.
So I'm very excited.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I trust Edgar Wright, so...
Yeah, there we go. Looking forward to it. And then our last piece of film news, Ambi Pictures wants to remake Memento.
So just let that sink in for a second. And then ask the question, why?
I mean, yeah, it's only been... Memento came out 15 years ago.
And it's fucking awesome.
And it's, yeah, it's like a, basically a, like a perfect movie. Like, you don't need to do...
They can't make a better version of that, so don't.
Like, it's such a unique movie on its own, and that's the movie that launched Christopher Nolan's career. He will not be involved with this remake if it comes to pass. But I guess Ambi Pictures recently gained the rights to a lot of different movies, including Memento, and including other movies like End of Watch and Donnie Darko. And they want to, you know, take a lot of their well-known properties that they've gotten the rights to and... expand upon them or do other things with them.
So ruin stuff.
Probably. Ruin stuff, basically. I mean, like, I'm not saying a remake of Memento can't be good, but it's also like, what's the point?
Yeah. Yeah. Like it, yeah, it was really good. It won a whole bunch of awards, I think.
Yeah. Like, it's not even like it was really good and it just came out 15 years ago. Like it was the year 2000. Like, it's not even like it was really good and it came out in 1950. Like, it's...
Right, like, that would make sense. I would understand that.
Like, the point of... I feel like the point of a remake of something is to, like...
I was gonna say, it's not even like they're like, oh, we'll update it for a new generation. It came out 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's the same generation.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, I mean, like, I feel like the point of a remake should be, you know, maybe take something that wasn't as good as it could have been or didn't reach its potential... and make that again, you know, to try to reach that potential.
Right.
Execute it a little bit better. Or take something that was liked and expand it for a new generation, like, you know, 30, 40 years later.
Yeah.
That could be something cool. You know, that could be interesting. This is a movie that came out 15 years ago.
Yep.
You know, all of its actors are still alive. still making movies, as far as I know. Christopher Nolan is still, you know, making movies and still, like... he's at the top of his career right now.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like such a pointless pointless cash grab to me.
Yep, absolutely. That's definitely what this is.
Yeah.
So hopefully it doesn't actually happen.
Hopefully it doesn't. But you never know. I feel like these guys might, like Ambi Pictures doesn't have any, like, much else going on, so they might.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe that's why they picked Memento, is we'll just get the one that would piss the most people off.
You're like, well, I guess I have to see this now.
Yeah, now I just got to go see it so I can tell everyone it sucks.
I think they picked Memento with the desire, with the idea that nobody will remember Memento exists because they're all the protagonists from Memento.
Whoa. Wait, what are we talking about?
So I guess that wraps it up for film news. We can move on to our discussions.
Yes.
So, I mean, I've got three things to talk about, and you've got one, so why don't you go first, and then I'll do my stuff.
All right. So, this week I'm talking about the new Marvel Netflix series, Jessica Jones.
Okay. So, I've seen the first episode of Jessica Jones when I was at Comic-Con, but right. I have not seen anything else. And you've watched the entire series in, like, a weekend?
Yeah, 2 days. I watched 12 episodes on one day, and then one episode the next day. So okay. I probably could have planned that better.
Probably.
But...
All right. I'm going to get through all of this plot and momentum, and then I'm going to lose it all.
Well, by then it was like 4 a.m. and I was like, I really need to go to sleep. But yes, that's exactly what happened. And then I was like mad because episode 12 ends on a cliffhanger that like isn't really a good cliffhanger. And I was like, why would they do that? And then I was like, oh, because you're supposed to binge and watch the whole thing all at once. But anyway, that doesn't detract from the show because it's awesome.
Okay.
It's amazing. Kristen Ritter is as Jessica Jones is a badass. Like, takes all of the hard-boiled detective, like, hard-drinking, like, doesn't sleep ever, curses all the time. Like, that whole genre, and is just amazing at it. It's okay. Great. And it features a lot of that, like, noir feel, like, you know, kind of dark shadows, cool, weird lighting, because the villain, played by David Tennant, who's also awesome.
Right. Kilgrave.
Is Kilgrave, also known as the Purple Man, apparently. I mean, they don't call him that in the show, but which is good, because that'd be lame as shit. But, you know, he kind of has this, like, purple aura around him all the time, which is cool. And he's, like, really creepy as a villain.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, his whole thing is mind control. So, like, that whole... It's very dark, serious. The whole season, you know, deals with trauma a lot. Like, the kind of people trying to come to terms with the things he made them do and stuff. It's really, really powerful and, you know, I guess trigger warning kind of thing. It's got a lot of that going on.
Right.
But it deals with it in a very open, upfront, as real as a superhero show could be.
Okay.
Type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard pretty fantastic things about the show, and again, I've seen the first episode and loved it.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to watch that again and then, like, get through the rest of the show. I don't really like binge watching.
Yeah, I understand.
Personally. feels like it takes a lot out of you.
You know? It does. It was intense.
You know, I prefer to go through my shows like an episode at a time, so I'm going through things very slowly, which sucks because Netflix just came out with, like, three shows that I really want to watch.
Yeah.
One of which I'll be talking about in a little bit. Is there any, in Jessica Jones, is there any references to the outside Marvel Universe, or is it, like, basically all self-contained?
Well, we get the obligatory reference to the incident, I think is what they call the New York invasion at the end of the Avengers.
Right.
We get that, and there is a cameo from someone in Daredevil, but I won't say who.
Okay.
But I'll tell you later, I guess, if you want.
Yeah, all right, I don't really care that much.
But it does connect it to the Daredevil universe. I mean, I guess the Avengers, too, because they talk about it. But it's really odd that there's a moment where they call them the big green guy and his crew instead of the Avengers to, like...
As if the Hulk is the leader of the Avengers.
Well, not even that, but, like, everyone knows them as the Avengers. It'd be weird to not say that word.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's true.
It's like instead of saying the Yankees being, like, Derek Jeter and his team. It doesn't make any sense. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. It's good. It's okay. Got a lot of cool action. The fights in the first episode or two feel really weird, which I guess makes sense because Jessica Jones is, like, super strength. So it feels, like, really laid back for her. But then as things ramp up,
it gets going.
Yeah.
How do you think it compares to Daredevil, Marvel's other Netflix TV show?
I think I enjoy Jessica Jones more, but that's because it's like my favorite genre of like detective and noir stuff.
Yeah.
So it hit all that for me. But it was neat that this was a lower stakes than Daredevil. Where, I mean, Kilgrave, you know, has the ability to do all this crazy shit, but it's much more a personal story of Jessica Jones against Kilgrave rather than
the citywide.
Yeah, like Fisk is going to blow up the whole city kind of thing. So that was cool to see that.
Very cool. So, yeah, I mean, I'm someone who, I thought Daredevil was fine, but I wasn't, like, all in on that show.
Right.
Do you think I will like Jessica Jones more than Daredevil?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I liked the first episode of Jessica Jones more than I liked any of Daredevil, so.
I feel like I'll probably enjoy it.
All right. Well, that is Jessica Jones. It is available. Every episode is available on Netflix right now, and that'll lead into The Defenders.
Yeah. Which, Eventually, right?
Eventually. Does it like do anything like laying groundwork for the Defenders? I know Luke Cage is part of the show.
Luke Cage is in the show, yeah. So there's that. The cameo from Daredevil kind of has a like, oh, I might be able to hook you up with somebody feel to it. So it's like sort of laying, just barely starting that. Because okay. I think next is Daredevil season 2.
I believe that's probably next. And then there's going to be the Luke Cage and Iron Fist TV shows.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be the Defenders.
Right. So I feel like we've still got a couple of years out before we get the Defenders.
Yeah, probably. I would say probably like 2017, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah. I know they said their schedule was every 6 months they want that. I mean,
a new Marvel show. So I think if they stuck to that, then Daredevil season 2 is coming out in like April probably.
Right.
And then like 6 months from that, probably Luke Cage. And then 6 months from that, probably Iron Fist. And then 6 months from that, the Defenders.
Yeah.
That'd be my guess.
I would hope so, although I'm sure there'll be a Jessica Jones season 2. Because, yeah. I mean, the other thing about this is, you know, it's full of powerful women, which is awesome to, like, actually see that finally in a Marvel thing.
Right, yeah. I mean, I feel like Marvel TV has been doing that pretty well. I mean, you don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Agent Carter.
Right, that's true. I forgot about those because I don't watch them, but you're right.
But Jessica Jones actually has a superhero in it, so there's...
Yeah, exactly.
These are mostly secret agents. Right. But in any case, that's Jessica Jones, available on Netflix. Mike really liked it, and he watched the entire thing in 2 days. So.
Yeah, so do that.
Yes. I'm going to, for my discussions, one of mine is another Netflix TV show that just came out this month called Master of None. This is the new show developed by Aziz Ansari, who is a great comedian that I love, and he's just coming off of his 7 years in Parks and Recreation. Yeah. And this is a show that's entirely his. It's created by him and another guy, Alan Yang. And it's basically, I've seen it compared to Louie a lot, because a lot of it is based on Aziz Ansari's stand-up and, you know, his situations. And it's very specific to his experience. And I think it's really interesting. You know, there are it's a lot of episodes that just examine, like, dating in New York or, like, you know, how young people interact with each other. But then there's other episodes that deal with, like, the immigrant experience of his parents and that kind of thing. And it's really funny. There's a lot of, like, really weird and absurdist humor in the show. And the cast is incredible. Aziz Ansari is great, as usual, in the lead role as Dev. But Eric Wareheim from Tim and Eric is a supporting role in this show. H. John Benjamin is a recurring role in the show. And Noelle Wells plays Aziz Ansari's love interest, Rachel, who is great. I love her.
All right.
I love her. I'm about 6 episodes into the show, and I'm really enjoying it so far. The episode that I just watched... it was just like an episode-long date with between Aziz Ansari and Noelle Wells, and it was phenomenal. Like it was so good. Like it's just watching them banter back and forth for like 30 minutes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. It was like really funny, and you know, I'm just a huge fan of Aziz Ansari. I'm a huge fan of the show. I think everybody should give it a shot.
There you go.
And that's Master of None. I also want to talk about a movie that I watched last night called The Zero Theorem, which is the new film from Terry Gilliam that came out last year. I wanted to see it last year, but I never got around to it, and nobody was making a big deal about it.
Yeah, I remember hearing that it came out, and then that was it.
Yeah, nobody was talking about it when it came out, and that was surprising to me because it was a new Terry Gilliam movie. Like, I feel like that's something that people usually talk about.
Right.
But this movie stars Christoph Waltz, and Melanie Thierry, David Thewlis, and Matt Damon also has a very small role in the movie.
Wow.
And it's very hard to describe.
Okay.
But it's very close to Brazil in terms of its like satire, like what it's trying to satirize and like the world that it creates.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't, I don't think it goes as far as like Brazil does in terms of its satire, in terms of what it's trying to say. But the story is that Christoph Waltz is a man dying of skin cancer who is like a programmer for this company who gets hired for this special job by management, played by Matt Damon. He's a guy named Management.
Perfect.
And Management has him try to crack the Zero Theorem, which is if you get it successfully, you will find out the meaning of life is basically the idea behind it. And there's a lot of really interesting scenes. There's a lot of good sequences in this movie. And there's a lot of really good performances. I think Christoph Waltz is really good in this movie. And Matt Damon's the 5 minutes or so he's in it is a lot of fun to watch.
Okay.
And it's mostly about Christoph Waltz's character, whose name is Cohen Leth. Just spelled Q. He keeps saying how to spell his name, and it's Q no U O H E N. And it's a movie that's occasionally funny, but it's mostly tragic, and it's you know, it does it's unique is what it is, and I can't remember seeing a movie like it very much very often, with the exception of probably Brazil. Right. You know, it definitely feels like Brazil light. Like, it feels like this is Brazil, but not as good. But like,
okay, not that it's bad.
Not that it's bad, but like, it just feels like, you know, it's been done before and better.
Right.
But in like the current like film environment, like, I feel like I haven't seen a movie like The Zero Theorem in a really long time. And so I think it's worth checking out for that. And you know, I'm a huge fan of Terry Gilliam. I think this kind of, you know, it stands up with his work. I think it works pretty well. At like. It's pretty solid overall. That's basically what I'm trying to say.
There you go.
Yes. And the other thing I want to talk about for my discussions is this podcast that I've been listening to called I Was There Too.
Unfortunately, it's now over after the podcast came.
It is unfortunate. R.I.P. Matt Gourley, who was the creator of the podcast. I was There Too is this podcast started about a year ago. Where Matt Gourley, who's a comedian who has several podcasts, he's on this podcast called James Bonding, which is a podcast about James Bond, as well as several improv podcasts and all that kind of stuff. He's a comedian, and he has appeared on shows like Drunk History and other stuff like that. And this is a podcast where he interviews people who are in movies, who are in very small roles in movies.
Wow. This sounds amazing.
Yeah, and so a lot of times you'll have him talking to well-known people, but just as many times you'll have him talking to, like, random folks who you never heard of in your life but played like a pivotal role in like one of your favorite movies.
That's awesome.
The first episode is him talking to Paul F. Tompkins about his small role in There Will Be Blood.
What? I don't even remember him in that.
He's in it. He has a very small role. He's like 2 days of filming in that movie. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, and that's an incredible interview. It's really funny. He talks to DC Pearson about his role in Captain America: The Winter Soldier. He talks to Phil LaMarr about playing Marvin in Pulp Fiction.
Yep. That's amazing. This is such a good idea for a podcast. Oh my God.
It's really great. And he talks, I mean, it's so many great interviews that I've just been catching up on. He talks to Paul Rust about playing one of the bastards that does not talk in Inglourious Bastards. he talks to Greg Proops about being in The Phantom Menace. Greg Proops played the announcer at the pod race.
Oh my God, I don't remember that.
In The Phantom Menace. He plays an alien.
Wow.
And it was great because you hear them like talking about these roles, and you just hear them talking about these weird stories that happen on sets, and how, like, you hear about the process of being an actor and what it's like to be in these really small roles. Like, Greg Proops was talking about how, like, you know, they had to go in filming on The Phantom Menace like 2 or 3 years before the movie came out, and they were on the same set as like across the street, Tomorrow Never Dies was filming, like, and so there was like Russian helicopters like coming by and like.
That's awesome.
All that kind of stuff. One of my favorites was there's a recurring segment on the show called I Wasn't There Too. Matt Gourley reads off some of the people who were like almost cast in the movie but didn't get it or like had to leave for whatever reason. And he did an episode long I Wasn't There Too where he interviews Paul Scheer about being in the movie Meet Dave. Which, if you remember the movie Meet Dave, that was an Eddie Murphy movie from 2008.
Like, I remember that.
Where like there was Eddie Murphy was like this
a robot thing.
He was an alien race that used Eddie Murphy's body as like a ship,
right? And okay,
And all of there was a bunch of tiny aliens inside that were played by Eddie Murphy,
right?
And Paul Scheer was in the movie as in a very small role and was cut from the final film. And so there's an episode long. There's like an hour long interview with Paul Scheer about the process of how he was cut from that movie.
That's amazing.
And it's really good. And there's an episode of this podcast. I knew this podcast was like specifically made for me. Yep. And you as well. You're going
to
get a kick out of
it. I'm going to subscribe to this right now.
There's an episode of this podcast where Matt Gourley talks to five of the passengers from the bus from Speed. Oh my God. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, whoa, now.
Yep. That's my favorite episode, and I haven't even listened to it.
This is the podcast for me. And he talks to Sam, the bus driver, is one of them. Ortiz is one of them. And, you know, it's really great. And so this is a really awesome podcast. And there's a bunch more episodes that I haven't listened to yet. But he talks to, like, Derek Mears, who played Jason in the Friday the 13th remake.
Yep.
And he talks to somebody from Field of Dreams. He talks to... like a woman, Jeanette Goldstein, who had very small roles in Aliens, Terminator 2, and Titanic.
All right. Nobody panic. I'm subscribed to this podcast now.
It's really fantastic. There's so many great interviews and so many just really cool film Hollywood stories. So I feel like if you're a fan of movies, if you're a fan of, you know, which I'm, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are.
Either that or you're our friends.
That too, yeah. So, but if you're a fan of movies, if you're a fan of podcasts, if you're a fan of interviews,
yeah.
You know, this I Was There Too by Matt Gourley. It's from Wolf Pop, which is the spinoff, like the subsidiary of Earwolf, which makes like Comedy Bang Bang and How Did This Get Made, both also right. really great podcasts. If you haven't listened to those, have you heard How Did This Get Made, Mike?
No, really? I'm not.
Oh my god! So I'm going to talk about that now.
All right, so add it to your discussions. Why not?
How Did This Get Made is a podcast which I really like. That's Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, and June Diane Raphael, all of whom are really funny comedians. And this is a movie riffing podcast. It's much like Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, makes sense.
Where they just take a movie and they don't watch the movie live and riff it, but they just like they watch the movie beforehand and then just like discuss the movie for like an hour, hour and a half.
Okay.
There's a lot of live episodes, and those are usually the best. They have a lot of guest appearances. Every year they do like the Sharknado movies, and they have Scott Aukerman show up for those.
Nice.
And they have a lot of other great. Great episodes. There's a Howard the Duck episode with Kristen Shaw, which is really great, and a lot of other great podcasts. That's just like a little like aside. As I was talking about, I Was There Too. I just wanted to mention that one as well because that one's really good too.
Unfortunately, all of these are over, but because they're all dead. The podcast games.
Yeah, unfortunately, we all ruined the podcasting landscape because there can only be one.
Yeah, that's right.
There can only be one.
We're going to have to change this to Highlander Cast.
Yes. Well, now that we're Highlander Cast, would you like to get into our featured review, Mike?
Yes, let's do it.
All right, let's get into the first featured review of Highlander Cast. This is the Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2.
Nothing good is safe while Snow's alive. I can't make another speech about it. Snow has to pay for what he's done.
One way or another, this war's gonna come to an end. There's only one thing you could do now to add more fire to this rebellion.
We all have one enemy. He corrupts everyone and everything. Turns the best of us against each other. Tonight, turn your weapons to the Capitol.
All right, that was from the trailer for The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2. It was directed by Francis Lawrence and written by Peter Craig and Danny Strong. Danny Strong is the guy who played Jonathan on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. For those of you in the know. He's also an accomplished screenwriter now, so that's...
So good for that guy.
Yeah. The movie stars Jennifer Lawrence, Josh Hutcherson, Liam Hemsworth, Donald Sutherland, Julianne Moore, Philip Seymour Hoffman in his final role, Woody Harrelson, Sam Claflin, Jenna Malone, Natalie Dormer, and many, many more. The IMDb plot synopsis reads, "As the War of Pan-Em escalates to the destruction of other districts by the Capitol, Katniss Everdeen, the reluctant leader of the rebellion, must bring together an army against President Snow, while all she holds dear hangs in the balance."
Wow.
Yeah, that's a pretty good synopsis, IMDb.
That's pretty good. That's way longer than anything we've ever had on the show.
Credit where it's due.
Yeah. Shout out to IMDb.
Yep, they need our support, obviously.
Yeah, sponsor us.
Before we get into our feelings on this movie, I guess we should talk about our relationship to this franchise a little bit. So, Mike, what is your opinion of the? I mean, have you read the Hunger Games books?
I have not read the books. No.
Okay, I read them right around the time they were popular. Like I was probably like 16 at the time.
Yeah.
And like I thought they were like fine overall. Like I remember thinking the first one was like okay, and the second one I hated, and then the third one I thought was actually pretty good.
Which yeah, actually, I mean, it says something that you read the third one after hating the second one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just wanted to finish, like...
Just finish the story.
They were such a cultural phenomenon at the time.
Right.
And that's I kind of just wanted to know what people were talking about. And so, ended up... And thought the third one was actually my favorite one of the series, which the opposite opinion of what most people have. from what I gather, it seems like everybody likes the first one the most.
Right.
And then they like the second one as well. Most, like, it seems like a lot of fans hate the third one. And I could sort of see why, because it's mostly, like, it's a significant departure from the first two stories, mm-hmm. you know, and it's the story about Katniss and, like, this rebellion, and, like, a lot of the book is just her hanging around the base.
Right.
Like, moping or whatever, which is most of the first movie as well, most of the first Mockingjay. But so you have seen the movies, though. You've seen all of them.
Yeah, I've seen all the movies, yeah.
Okay, and so what is your relationship with those movies? Like, what's your overall opinion on those?
These are action movies based on a popular book. Like, I don't know. I was never really excited. I enjoy the movies. They have been progressively getting better with each film, which is nice.
Right.
But it's not. I guess they're cool. Like, I don't. I don't feel strongly either way. I guess.
Okay.
My opinion.
The neutrinos from Futurama once again.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you know, again, I came out of those books thinking, like, overall those were fine, right? And so when the movies came out, saw the first movie and wasn't really a fan. And I think there was interesting stuff in that movie, but I think the filmmaking style really turned me off.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah, I mean, The Hunger Games more like the shaky cam games. Am I right?
Yes. Which I feel like I remember people saying, I mean, obviously now people were complaining about that, but, like, to keep the PG-13 rating, they did that. Like, because anytime someone died, they got shaken out of frame.
Yeah, but it was even, like, even before the game started, it would just be shaking all over the place, like, during a regular scene. Like,
yeah, that's true.
And it was really annoying, and I thought the movie, like, there was fine stuff in the movie, but overall, like, the book, it didn't really do much for me.
Mm-hmm.
But then they switched directors for Catching Fire. Francis Lawrence directed that movie and has directed both Mockingjay movies as well. And I think he had a much better visual eye for these movies.
Yeah.
You know, Catching Fire was a much more like the camera stood in one place.
Right.
which was nice.
They invested in a tripod, which was nice.
Yeah. I really liked the first half of Catching Fire, actually. I remember liking that a lot. And then once the game started, I was really bored. I remember thinking that's sort of how I felt while reading the book, even though I didn't much care for the first half of that book either. I remember once the game started, it just feels like a retread of the first movie, and it's like, well, what are we doing here, you know?
Right. I did kind of like, though, in Catching Fire, the games, I mean, obviously they're different, like, you know, it's the Quarter Quell or whatever it was.
Right.
Whatever, the Victor's Game thing. But we get to see more of the, like, game part of it, like, much more environmental stuff is affecting them.
Yeah.
Which was neat, because I was going into it, like, really? We're just gonna watch, like, a bunch of people kill each other again? Like, nothing new. But, like, they do new things with it, which is cool.
Okay.
Which I guess is a credit to the book, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, I still felt like that was, like, such a retread of the first movie. Like, there wasn't much you could do. Because, I mean, the first movie, the whole idea behind it is that it's kids killing kids.
Right.
And, you know, after that, like, what do you, like, the Catching Fire, it's not kids killing kids anymore. It's, like, the previous winners fighting against each other. And that's a cool idea. I like that, but it doesn't have the same visceral reaction, I guess.
Right.
As, you know, you get from kids killing kids, which, just to be that guy, like, I was that guy when the Hunger Games was, like, first popular, being like, I liked it better when it was called Battle Royale, and it was
just... Yep, and it was Japanese, yes.
Yeah.
I was also that guy.
Yeah. And, so, you know, I was kind of the most insufferable person of all time. But
right.
But that said, you know, I didn't really care for the first Hunger Games movie. And I liked about half of Catching Fire. I thought Mockingjay Part 1 was really great. Like, really solid all the way through. And part of that was because it got rid of the games entirely. And it, you know, kind of just focused on these characters who we've come to know over the past couple of movies. And so I thought Mockingjay Part 1 did a really effective job of, like, getting us in the zone for this war and, like...
Right.
And, you know, part of what people... part of what this franchise does is kind of satirize, like, you know, our relationship to the media and our relationship to how we perceive certain things.
Right.
And so, The Hunger Games is, like, our... Like, kind of making fun of our relationship with reality television.
Right. And our, you know, the role violence plays and still a lot of stuff, like...
Exactly, yeah. And I think Mockingjay kind of takes that idea and moves it towards, like, war propaganda and all that kind of stuff. And I think that worked really well in that first movie.
Yeah.
And I got to say, Mockingjay Part 2 totally squanders, like, every...
Yes.
Everything that made the first movie really good. First part really good.
I would agree with that. Well, I don't know if I would say the film squanders it, but waiting a year between these movies? I know who Katniss is, and I don't remember anybody else.
I really feel like splitting the book in two really hurts it. You know, and I don't even care that much about waiting a year, but I feel like the way they went about it, like, it results in a really, like, dull, bland movie. Do you know what I mean? Everything about this movie seems like it's on autopilot. Like, you know, every performance, like, just seems like, yeah, all right, this is the last one, whatever.
Right.
You know, there's nothing visually that interesting about this movie. It just feels like very gray and very dull. It's virtually indistinguishable from the Hunger Games knockoffs that have come out in the last couple of years, like The Maze Runner or Divergent, you know?
Yep. Yeah. there is a moment this morning where I was, like, getting ready, you know, and I was like, oh, yeah, we're doing, you know, film bookcast today. What movie are we reviewing? What did I say? Oh, Hunger Games. Okay, right. Like, that, I literally had that thought because I forgot that I saw this movie this weekend.
Yeah, like, I saw this, like, 2 days ago, and
yes,
already it's kind of left me. And that's a shame because I really did think the Mockingjay book did the most right in that series. Like, it's the one people don't like because it's the one that challenges them the most.
Right. And that's such a part of God.
I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to be that insufferable
pretentious asshole. but I wonder, I mean, as I haven't read the book, do you think it's where they decided to split it affected it? Do you think they could have picked a better place?
I think splitting it in general, like,
just in general,
hurt it really badly. I mean, like, I thought the first half, like, part one was really good, but I feel like they would have had to change things significantly for part two to work.
Right.
If they were gonna have to split it, and part of that is that you know, all the characters that we've come to like over the course of the three movies, like, have been with for three movies, are basically sidelined in this film.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Woody Harrelson's Haymitch is in, like, three scenes.
Right.
Elizabeth Banks' Effie is in, like, two scenes.
Yep.
You know, and obviously Philip Seymour Hoffman was supposed to have a bigger role, but obviously he died. So
not much. That.
Not much you can do there.
Yeah.
You know, characters like, so basically, this movie kind of focuses on the trio of Katniss, Peeta, and Gale.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the problem with that is that the love triangle between those three has never worked, like, ever.
Right. Okay.
The reason for that is because Gale is a non-existent character. He is.
Yeah, I don't know why he is a thing.
Yeah, that was my main problem when reading the first book, and also, like, in those first couple movies, like, they make such a big deal about Gale and they keep mentioning him. He does nothing.
Yeah.
He has maybe, like, 5 minutes of screen time in the first Hunger Games movie.
Yep.
Or in the book, like, he's not in it, you know. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It feels so forced.
Yeah,
like that potential romance.
Yeah, it feels like this was, like, they had this idea to make this young adult series about this, like, dystopian future, to me it feels like the editor, like, went in and was like, this is a young adult series, there's got to be a love triangle in here somewhere,
right? Right,
because that was that was coming right off the heels of Twilight. Like, that was, like,
yep,
the thing.
Definitely.
And so everything with Katniss, Peeta, and Gale just doesn't work for me. And also, like, Jennifer Lawrence is a really great actress.
Yeah.
Love her. Josh Hutcherson and Liam Hemsworth, they're, like, fine.
They're okay.
But you have this movie that is, like, filled with phenomenal actors, and you're going to focus on these guys?
Yeah. Yep.
You know? Like, yeah. You have Woody Harrelson right there. You have Elizabeth Banks right there. You have Donald Sutherland as your villain. You have Julianne Moore and Philip Seymour Hoffman just hanging around watching a TV screen for the entire movie.
Yep.
Like,
there's a lot of that going on. That's very true. I mean, it felt like all of the momentum built up in Mockingjay Part 1 is just gone.
Yeah. Like,
because it's like, I literally didn't remember who people were. I mean, obviously, like, Julianne Moore and, like, all those people, but, like, all the supporting victors, the other victors that are part of the rebellion, well, I was like, I don't know who any of these people are.
I feel like we were seeing a lot of them for the first time.
Yeah, maybe. I don't remember.
Like, this movie really could have used like a recap.
Yeah, like, I wish there was a previously on in the beginning of this movie.
Previously on Mockingjay Part 1. Like, yeah. Because that's the, like, the movie I'm going to compare this to is Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows, because that was also split into two movies.
Right.
But I think that was done really effectively. And, like, Deathly Hallows Part 2 has a complete story and a complete arc in its, you know, story. It also starts with a previously on Deathly Hallows Part 1. Like, it tells you, like, oh, yeah, Voldemort got the Elder Wand, and this happened, and this happened. And you're right. Like, all right, cool.
I'm all caught up. I got it.
Good. Good to know.
Yeah, like, this starts, I'm pretty sure, not mid-scene, but when they're, like, talking to PETA and stuff, after they saved him.
I'm pretty sure it picks up, like, right where Mockingjay Part 1 left off. I think so it's been a full year since I've seen Mockingjay Part 1.
Yeah, I saw it in theaters and I haven't seen it again.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that movie ended with PETA attacking Katniss.
Yes, yeah, it did.
Yeah, so this is, like, right after that.
Right. Yeah, so, like, it's just really, I don't know, just don't remember all the momentum. Like, I don't remember what's going on. I don't know who the people are.
Yeah.
I mean, there was good stuff in the film.
Yeah. I think there are a couple of exciting sequences.
Yeah.
Like when they're,
in the sewers.
Yeah. And like those weird zombie things attack them or whatever.
Whatever that was. Yeah. That was actually
the vampires from Iron Legend.
Yes. Basically.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that was a pretty exciting sequence, but they're surrounded by a movie where, like, nothing is happening for 90% of its runtime.
Right. I don't know. just very underwhelmed by the film, in general.
Like it just felt like nothing. And, yeah, it wastes the characters whose presence, like, could be compelling in favor of, like, its young, nameless protagonists.
Yeah. You
know? Like,
that's Pretty Thor and that other guy.
Yeah, Pretty Thor. Yeah. Yeah, they got the lesser Hemsworth in these movies.
Poor Lee Hemsworth.
But, I don't know, there are some things I want to talk about in spoilers, so should we just move on right into that?
Yeah, I think we've got our feelings across.
Yeah, okay, so neither of us were a huge fan of Mockingjay Part 2. Let's discuss some things in spoilers right now.
Stop it!
All right, so spoilers for Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2 starting right now. So, in this movie, Katniss goes on like the secret mission to assassinate President Snow, right?
Right.
And when she goes, she meets up with this army crew, and she like it's her and PETA and Gale.
Yep.
Finnick, who was in Catching Fire, and he was in Mockingjay Part 1,
mm-hmm.
and then like four or five other, like, nameless people. I mean, they have names, but we've never seen them before.
Yep.
And that's it. And it's them going on. And imagine a version of this movie where instead of those four or five nameless people, you had the characters who you've grown to, like over the course of the three previous films. If you had, like, Haymitch joining them, or Effie, or Joanna and Beatty, like, Jeffrey Wright's character and John Malone's character.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, that would be a much better movie.
That would be so cool.
Why wasn't that? Like, why wasn't that the case?
I don't know. I mean, we get Natalie Dormer's character.
Right, and Natalie Dormer character could be fine there, like, too. She was in she had, like, three scenes in Mockingjay Part 1. And she
was that
like,
it, really? I don't even remember.
I don't think she had a huge role. And then she's in a couple scenes of this movie, too. Like, it was not that much. And this movie has no sense of humor.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm, like, naturally drawn to movies about, like, a ragtag group of rebels taking down...
Oh, yeah, yes, I know what you're saying.
An evil empire.
Yep.
You know, for lack of a better word. And so, you know, compare this to Deathly Hallows Part 2, where, you know, everybody on the good side is somebody that we've seen in previous movies and we've, like, grown to like over the course of 8 films.
Right.
You know, here it's like... these three characters, two of whom I don't care for.
Right.
Finnick, who is a guy who I always forget exists.
And, right.
And then, like, five other people who are just, like, there.
There, yeah. And, I mean, we get, like, twins to care about, I guess, because they're twins. But, like, whatever. Yeah,
but then, like, when those characters die, it's like, all right. Like, if that was Haymitch dying, I would care.
If it was somebody I cared about, I would care.
Like that.
If it was someone I wasn't introduced to 20 minutes ago.
Exactly. And so that's, I think it's part of what, like, if, I think it's part of what's splitting the movie into two, why it hurts it, because,
yeah,
you know, if you could have had, like, you could have had this entire movie tacked on for, like, the last 30 minutes of Mockingjay Part 1.
Yeah.
Would have been great.
Right. I think if you just extended Mockingjay Part 1, another, like you said, another, you know, another half hour, 45 minutes or whatever, it would be a long movie, but it would be a complete movie.
I mean, you could, like, cut out a little bit of Mockingjay Part 1 here and there, and then, like, just add this, add, like, a very succinct version of what happens in this movie at the end of Mockingjay Part 1.
Yep.
It would probably be great.
Yeah, but we got to get those Dalla Dalla bills. So we're going to split this into two movies. Yeah. And I feel this film suffers a lot from the, and he was wearing glasses to show time had passed. Like, suddenly a character will show up and their hair's long. And it's like, what? There's a lot of that kind of thing going on, whereas, like, I don't, it's just kind of, yeah, time has passed now. Like, I don't know, it was weird.
Yeah. And what did you think of Julianne Moore's character, President Coin, and how, Katniss kills her in the end?
What's a twist?
I mean, I feel like that would have had a lot more meaning if we had seen her do anything in this movie. President Coin.
Yeah, we get a hint of, like, ooh, she's nefarious. When...
Yeah, she's trying to be, like, the new ruler, and, like, she's... And then, at the end, she suggests, like, a new Hunger Games.
Yeah.
To, like, we... to as revenge against the Capitol, which is, like...
Right.
All right, so you're obviously evil, like...
Right. Well, yeah, well, the scene when Katniss, you know, jumps on the transport ship and goes to the front line, like, on her own.
Right.
And she said... Julianne Moore says... you know, whatever she does, make it look like we planned it. Like, when you get that, and it's like, oh, maybe she's actually sneaky. Like, also, a little on the nose with President Coin. Like, come on. We get it.
Wait, what?
Coin, money, like... I get it. Don't worry about it.
All right, as long as you get it.
I get it. It's fine. Oh, yeah, so she, like, it doesn't... That's kind of what I meant by the wearing glasses to show time has passed thing. Like, oh, we're given this bit of information about you. Something's gonna, like, oh, we found out that the camera guy spent all his life down here, you know, to buy his freedom in the sewers. Somebody, you're gonna experience a tragedy now because we know that about you. Because, like, there's so many of these characters that we've never seen. Like, we've seen him before, but we don't know anything about them.
Right.
And then we're given a reason to care for them so they could die.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. And, yeah, President's Coin death, I think it's actually, like, it's all right, like, in the moment, but, like...
Yeah.
Like, there's no build-up to it. There's nothing, like, there... I feel like I've never got enough between Jennifer Lawrence and Julianne Moore to, like, really get their animosity out. And even Jennifer Lawrence, I think, is a great actress, but I think she is, like... completely flat in this movie until the very end where she has her crying scene over Prim's death. I think that was effective.
Yes.
And by the way, what did you think of Prim's death? as someone who didn't read the books, did you see that coming?
No, actually, not up until it actually, like, once I saw all the medics running in to the bombs, I was like, oh, it's like the thing they said. but... And I feel like that, I mean, that was kind of effectively done, but there's a lot of just, like, exposition that happens to justify stuff. Like, we get the squad leader telling Katniss that, like, oh, now you're a threat to Coin. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I get it, I guess. But that Prim's death was effective. It, you know, was sad and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think what bugged me about it is that Prim is only in, like, two scenes of the movie.
Yeah,
like right at the beginning, and then she disappears for like 2 hours, and then
she's gone, and then comes back to die. Like
to die, yeah,
yeah, comes back to die, and it's. I guess the whole film suffers from the lack of the momentum. Like what we've been saying, that like it's been a year since I've thought about these characters.
Right,
I don't really care anymore about any of these people.
Right, but I think even like even without the year long gap, I feel like this movie would not work on like.
Yeah.
Like, if they had, like, split this movie, split these movies into two parts and released them, like, a week apart, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, the structure of this movie is all off. Like, there's no beginning, middle, and end. It's just the end.
Right. That's a good point.
And, you know, it doesn't really work for me. But I thought Prim's death, yeah, she's only in, like, two scenes before she disappears for 2 hours, and then she dies. And there is, like, a prolonged hug that Katniss gives Prim, like, right before she leaves.
Right.
Which is like, oh, she's doing this because Prim's going to die later.
Saying goodbye.
But what actually really bugged me is that Katniss's mom does not show up at all in the movie until Prim dies in the end.
Yeah, I didn't know that was her mom until she called her mom.
Until she said mom. Like, yeah. Katniss was in the hospital earlier in the movie, and her mom was not there.
Right.
And it's weird. Like, why?
I don't get it. I don't remember. Apparently she's a nurse, I guess. Doctor? I don't know.
But
so there's a lot of that kind of thing going on.
Yeah, I also thought... I think there was, like, a couple scenes where the movie's, like, jumping through hoops to explain why Philip Seymour Hoffman isn't there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like that's understandable.
Sure, but I feel like the way it, like, at the very end of the movie, like, Woody Harrelson comes by and
reads the letter.
Yeah, like, oh, Plutarch gave you this letter. Here's what he said.
Yeah.
Or when they're having, like, that roundtable meeting with all the winners of the Hunger Games, mm-hmm. and Plutarch's not there. Somebody's like, oh, was this Plutarch's idea? Something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a little weird. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like they could have written around that, you know, better.
Yeah. That's what I wondered. I thought they filmed both of these at the same time, right?
Yeah, he died during filming.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. So, who knows?
Yeah.
We do get some CGI Philip Seymour Hoffman at the end.
Yes. My main takeaway from this movie is that I really miss Philip Seymour Hoffman, actually.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah, because he's definitely not in enough of this movie. But I remember in Catching Fire, like, his scenes with Donald Sutherland were, like, the best scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
If you remember that. Like, he was just, like, basically all he did in that movie was just have, like, it was just him sitting across the table from Donald Sutherland that he would cut back to once in a while, and they'd be like, oh, we must do something about this Katniss.
Right.
And those were great, because Philip Seymour Hoffman's a phenomenal actor, and, like...
Yeah. Yeah, two great actors. Like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it does suffer from his loss,
Yeah, I mean, like I was saying, many of these characters are mostly just, like, glorified cameos. Elizabeth Banks genuinely has, like, one scene in this movie.
Yep. You know? And it's just for her to do, like, Effie things. Like, to be in a crazy costume. That's kind
of
it.
Pretty much. Yeah. What'd you think of the epilogue of the movie with Katniss and Peeta and their two kids?
Time had passed. Like, that's...
I thought that epilogue was so bad.
Yeah.
Because of that voice, not voiceover, but, like, her speech at the end. It's like, I know the game gets a little tedious, but there are much worse games to play. I was like, fuck! That was the worst.
This is some young adult writing. Like, is that the last line of the book as well?
I genuinely don't remember. Okay. I read that book 6 years ago or so.
Okay. Because that's what it felt like. It was like, wow. There, I get it.
It probably is the last line of that
book. It probably is.
I probably hated it then, too, but I I don't remember it. But, yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, I don't really know why we needed that. Like, it kind of just dragged on for a while at the end. Like, it ended, and then it ended a second time, and then it finally ended.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a couple of different endings. I mean, I don't know. Overall, you're not a fan, right, Mike?
Yeah, it was a thing that happened. It wasn't bad, it just wasn't good. I don't know.
All right, I mean, I think it was bad. there's that.
I wish it had ended with if Peeta hadn't stopped Katniss from taking the Nightingale, or whatever the hell the pill was called, when she assassinates the President Coin.
Right.
That would have been badass as hell. But no.
No.
No, it's got to be a happy ending.
Well, I wouldn't say it's a happy ending.
Well, I mean, with Peeta and the kids and everything.
Yeah.
Like, we got to get to that point, because young adult.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, I was pretty disappointed by this movie because I really liked the first one, or the third one, I guess, Mockingjay Part 1.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just whatever.
I'm not coming at it with the, having read the book also.
I mean,
it definitely changes, you know.
I guess. I mean, I'm coming out of having read the book, but I also didn't care about the book that much.
But it was your favorite book in the series.
That's true. But like, I didn't care about the series that much. Like, it was all right. But anyway, I feel like it should have just been one movie.
Definitely. I agree with that.
Do you think at some point Lionsgate's going to try to milk some more out of the Hunger Games? Like,
I'm sure we will.
I feel like they might.
What number Hunger Games was this? 74 or whatever the hell? So there's like...
Well, there was... The second movie was the 75th Hunger Games. That's the quarter quote.
So there's like, you know, 73 previous Hunger Games. For all of the prequels that will be made.
Yeah, there's going to be 73 prequels about the Hunger Games. Oh my god. All right, well, I guess that about wraps up our review of Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2. We were not fans.
Yeah, nope.
You liked it a little more than I did, but... even so,
I don't know if I'd say I guess more than you. Yeah.
All right. Where can we find you online this week, Mike?
Find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog.
All right. Anywhere else?
Sometimes we stream my D&D games. If you'd like to watch that on Twitch, that's at twitch.tv/geonerd79.
All right. And you can find me on twitter.com/msmithfilmblog, as well as all my podcasts for filmbook.com, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Gotham. And you can find our other podcast, The Complete Works, also on filmbook.com.
There you go.
Thank you for listening to Film Bookcast. If you're listening to this review of our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to our podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, stop discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, or produce so many different ones, so hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us next week for the next episode of The Complete Works, where Mike and I will be discussing Nicolas Cage's role in Moonstruck. So that'll be exciting.
Yeah.
It'll be good times. And you can check out the next Film Bookcast in 2 weeks, where I guess Mike and I will probably be reviewing Creed.
Yeah.
Probably,
yeah,
right?
I'm excited for that. I've heard good things.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Creed, the band, is is one of my favorite bands. So I'm pretty excited about this new movie that they're coming out with.
Shut your face, Mike.
I'm super excited for Creed. I think it's going to be really good, and I'm a huge fan of the Rocky movies, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. We're getting that, and then it's it's Oscar season, basically.
It's that
come December.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's Oscar season, but it's also Star Wars season.
Well, they're not mutually exclusive.
I don't know. I feel like one might overtake the other. I feel like okay. Like, I'm gonna want to see a bunch of Oscar movies, but I'm probably gonna want to see Star Wars like five times.
I'm probably gonna want to see. You're right. So, yeah. We'll wait till post December 17th, and then it's Oscar season.
It'll be Oscar season for like 2 weeks.
And then... Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for listening, guys. We are out.